When opposition arises, how do we decide between fight and flight? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host, and we are continuing our series on 1 and 2 Thessalonians. My conversation partners are Dave Thomas, Dean of the School of Theology at Walla Walla, and Emily Flotman, a member of the pastoral staff at the Walla Walla University Church. Welcome to both of you.
Greetings.
Thank you.
Now, what I'd like to do today is continue more with the background, although the topic of our study is preserving relationships, which is, again, very curious because Paul only preached for 3 weeks in Thessalonians and then escaped. So, you know, there weren't many relationships that had been built there. But in that connection, I think the question I'd like to ask right at the beginning is, how much opposition does one take before one decides to get out of town? Because that's what Paul did. I mean, things got so bad that he had to leave. See, are there situations today where we have that same kind of confrontation where a person just has to escape? And if so, when do you decide that?
I think, at least in my experience, is the leaving happens when the conversation is no longer effective, when conversation has hit an impasse, and there is the resistance is firm resistance that isn't likely going to change, then time is better spent elsewhere.
Mm. And for me, this is a tough question, very difficult question, because I saw a video some years ago of an Indian Christian, is an Indian from India, who was going into a region of the country where he was putting his life at risk to go and preach. And on the video, he said, my family and I are going here to preach the gospel or die. Mm. And so in his mind, I mean, that to me was very striking, that he was going there either to preach the gospel or die. And there are occasions, and of course, Paul has lots of occasions where there was serious mistreatment. So I like Emily's answer. I think there are some exceptions to it. Mm. And I don't know how you tell the difference between the two.
Well, the same question.
Perhaps by an inner conviction, I don't know.
Sure. The same thing applies to a marriage or to a teaching or pastoral situation. Hmm. You know, many things where couples will laugh over things, when that goes to the place where they fight over them instead of laughing over them, that's a pretty dangerous symbol. Yeah. And if you're in a group setting, a ministry statement, and they no longer laugh at your jokes of any kind, that's kind of a deadly thing as well.
Yes, I think under normal circumstances, Emily's answer is very applicable, is that you stay in a place until you're no longer being productive. Mm-hmm. But I do think there are some extraordinary circumstances where somebody is called to go into hostile territory to either preach or die, suffer and die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, another question that comes up, and it's linked with our title of Preserving Relationships. Paul escapes from Thessalonica after 3 weeks, ends up in Berea, and one of the most famous verses in Scripture having to do with study states there in Acts 17:11, these were more noble than those in Thessalonica because they studied to see whether these things are so. Mm. Now, at...
So did the people in Thessalonica ever read this or hear about this?
Did they see it in the email or on the blog?
Because this ranks kind of with Peter's comment about Paul wrote things that are hard to understand.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Typically, outright comparisons like that are not advisable. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, this wasn't Paul who made this. This was the author of Acts who made that statement. But I don't see anything, at least in 1 Thessalonians, that would qualify for making that kind of comparison. Mm-hmm. So we're really kind of in the dark.
Except we weren't there, and apparently the author of Acts knew more than we know.
That's most likely the case.
And I suppose the best thing to do is to commend the Bereans, and they've been commended many times in history. Commend them and be like them.
That's mm-hmm. right. And if you think about that, that's really unusual because pastors typically, when they greet the people coming out of church, they want to be affirmed. You know, that was a wonderful sermon, Pastor. Instead, the Berean model suggests, Pastor, you set us to thinking, and we'll be back. And that really is something worth emulating. Hmm. Now, the next one, also when it comes to building relationships, is sending a substitute. Now, last week we talked about the amazing phenomenon of establishing relationships just in 3 weeks and then escaping. But Paul took this bond with him, and so when he got down to Athens, that was the next stop after Berea, he simply says, I couldn't stand it any longer, so I decided to send Timothy. The language there is something which suggests really a very intense bonding with the local community. But what would you think in general about if you can't go back to a place, send second in command? That feels to me like kind of a letdown. You want Paul, but, well, here comes Timothy. Any comments on that in general, the advisability of that?
I think to have somebody who is known and connected to the person you really want to see is better than having nobody. I mean, we do this in government all the time. The president can't go, and so we send a representative. And so I don't. And maybe Paul had an issue of his own safety or their safety in mind. So I don't think it's a bad thing. But I do agree it is a bit of a step down. But if Timothy goes there bearing greetings from Paul and, you know, talks face-to-face with the people in Thessalonica, I think it's a good thing. It's better than not having anything. And it's better than just a letter.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And I would say since the theme of this is preserving relationships, is it did open up another opportunity for another relationship and another another mentor. And Paul writes that he couldn't come, but maybe there was really good reasons why he couldn't come. Maybe they needed what Timothy had to give them. And while I'm sure there was initial disappointment, I'm sure that also Timothy blessed them in a way maybe Paul couldn't.
Yeah. I have one vivid personal memory in this connection. Way back when Malcolm Maxwell was a teacher here and a very well-known teacher, he used to teach Sabbath school on the Sabbath morning in Kretschmar Lecture Hall. And the people would pack that place in from way early. Well, Malcolm did a lot of traveling, but he never announced in advance when he wasn't going to be there. And I was just a young teacher, and he asked me, that always impressed me that he, you know, let a young teacher do some of these things. But I distinctly remember one Sabbath when I walked down that hallway and walked into the room. Here were all these people expecting Malcolm. There were audible groans. People get up and leave. The best line that I had, though, was when that happened once, I paused for a minute and I said, well, now you know what Jacob felt like, and you know how, and I know how Leah felt like. And that brought the house down. But boy, that substitute can be really a tussle. But obviously, with Timothy, it worked. Mm-hmm. Now, another aspect that our study guide, our official study guide, talks about is the changing of methods to try to meet people more effectively. Now, Paul is very explicit in Corinthians, where he says, I became all things to all people, that I might by some means save all. In other words, he's being very flexible. Now, it's been fairly typical of devout evangelicals to compare what Paul says in 1 Corinthians, I decided to preach nothing but Christ crucified, as if that was saying that what he did in Athens was wrong. But as I read the account in Acts and what Paul says in Corinthians, I think that comparison is wrong, perhaps even deadly. But I'd be interested in your
observations.
Now,
why do you think it's deadly? That's a strong language.
Deadly because a method that brought people into the service of Christ in Athens may be rejected. That's why I think it's deadly. In other words, people say, this works, that doesn't, don't you dare do that anymore.
Yeah, so I mean, were Paul's efforts in Athens a failure? I know there was no church raised up there.
It says at the end that there were some.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So there were. So I agree with you that I think that I've heard people say, well, Paul went in, tried to throw philosophy around and failed, and he went to Corinth saying that he determined to know nothing but Jesus Christ as an outgrowth of his apparent failure in Athens. And I don't agree with that. I like what William Barclay says. He says that the fear that you sense here in the Apostle Paul is the fear of anticipation or the fear that an actor feels before going out on the stage or a preacher feels before going up, the tension that's necessary to do well. He wanted to do well there in proclaiming the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
So I
if I take a look at Acts 17, just to confirm what I said. This is at the end of his Athenian experience. At that, Paul left the council. Some of the people became followers of Paul and believed. Among them was Dionysus, member of the Areopagus, also a woman named Damaris, and a number of others.
Mm-hmm.
So while it may not have been in the hundreds or thousands, the author of Acts says there were some that came in.
Yeah. And actually, theology and philosophy are closely related, and they can be great assets to each other. Philosophy can be very useful in in doing good theology.
And what I notice here is along the lines, Alden, of what you said earlier about Paul saying, becoming all things to all people. Paul had the ability to recognize where to start and what message they needed to hear. And again, it speaks to relationship. It's hard to speak to people where the relationship, you don't understand them. Mm-hmm. How do you begin speaking to them? And so Paul obviously had a great awareness of where to begin with people in the specific situations they were dealing with.
Inevitably, when you come into a new situation, there will be a certain amount of experimentation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You don't know what's going to work.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the most challenging sermons I ever preached was out in rural Africa to a group of Bushmen known as the I don't know what they call them now, Han, I think. But these are people who are hunter-gatherers still, and I had to preach to them one Sabbath. And it was an astonishing experience because my frame of reference is so different from theirs.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, even in places where you think there would be a closer reference, I've had an amazing thing. I did a year of teacher exchange at our school. It was at Darmstadt at the time. And I've been teaching long enough now that I can read an American audience pretty well.
Hmm.
I went into this class late August and began teaching. I read their body language as if they were American students. Hmm. And so when I presented certain concepts, I figured this is old hat. These are bright German students. They know about all this. And so I moved on rather quickly. But it wasn't until February, started in August. It wasn't until February when probably the brightest student in the class raised his hand and asked a question. All of a sudden, the lights popped on, and I said, wow, they're just now beginning to understand. One last thing here as we move towards the close, preserving relationships. What do you think is the most important thing for Paul and for us? Now, that's a heavy question with just a few moments left here. Do you have something that comes to mind quickly as to what the most important thing for preserving relationships would be?
Be kind.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Paul said something about that, too.
Mm-hmm.
And be honest.
Be kind and be honest.
Mm. And love honesty.
Speak the truth in love.
Yeah, good. All right, next week, we're going to be talking about Thessalonica in Paul's day. We're going to be focusing more specifically on the city itself. Emily and David will be back with us again. My thanks to Chad Ofterhauer, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.